Hello, and welcome to Nottingham City of Caves. Nottingham is riddled with caves, over 500 in the city centre alone. Take a look at the map on the wall, and you'll see that you won't be walking very far in the city centre without being close to one of our famous caves. But none of Nottingham's caves came about naturally. All were scraped and hacked out of the soft sandstone rock on which the city was founded. The caves that you are about to see were to provide many opportunities for shelters, industry, brewing, and storage. This hidden past now lies buried below the streets of our modern city, and your journey around the City of Caves today will give you a unique opportunity to discover our secret history. It is important to be aware of the varying ceiling heights within the caves, and to take care on your journey through, as many of the narrow passageways and footpaths have uneven floors. We would like to thank you for visiting the City of Caves today, and make you aware that the admission fee that you have paid will go towards preserving and maintaining this protected, scheduled historic monument for future generations to enjoy. Time now to send you on an incredible journey into the past. Ensuring there are no visitors on the way back up the staircase, please make your way down the steps using the handrail as you go. And parents, please ensure you supervise your children at all times. We wouldn't want any of you to get lost down there. Take care, but above all, enjoy your visit. Make your way down the staircase to the next level.
As we have already explained, all the caves that you are about to see are man-made, with some dating back to the 9th century. There are around 500 beneath the city, all carved out of soft sandstone by different people for different reasons. So, if you could strip back today's modern city, Nottingham would have started out as an area full of stony cliffs and ridges that the locals, or many travellers that passed through for that matter, could cut and scrape away at, to form a place to shelter, or sometimes live in. They carved out so many holes that back in 1868, Nottingham was named by one visitor as Tigo Cabourc. This was the old Anglo-Saxon-style language of the day, which meant place of cavey dwellings. The stone itself is over 160 million years old and was formed when this part of England was the delta of a great river. It stretches from Sherwood Forest, some 20 miles to the north of Nottingham, to right here where we stand at the very edge. Look carefully at the sandstone. Can you see the indentations that were made by tools that were used to carve them out? You will also see that it is made up of many different sizes of pebble along with many clay deposits that date back to a prehistoric time. You may also notice some more contemporary features in this area. And you will see some of the many tons of concrete that were used to strengthen the caves during the construction of the Broadmarsh Shopping Centre.
When you are ready, take the passageway to the right. Stop by the well on the left-hand side, Wells.
All the caves were dug out for a reason, and have had lots of uses over the years, from chapels to prison cells, pub cellars to secret meeting rooms. This gap in the wall houses one of the many wells that were sunk into the sandstone for fresh water. If you walk forward a little way, you will see a much bigger well to your right. The second well has footholes cut into the shaft, to enable the owner to climb in and out as they were working on cutting or cleaning the well.
That man has just finished his job of cleaning out the well and of cutting it ever deeper into the rock to make sure there is always pure water for him and his family. There are footholds cut into the shaft for him to climb.
passageway that you are standing in would have been solid rock when the well was carved. And up above this cave, back in the 13th century, there wouldn't have been a shopping centre, but an area known as Broad Marsh, which would have been an up-and-coming part of Nottingham to live in at the time.
When you are ready, continue along a short way until you see a tunnel to your left. Make your way to the end of the tunnel, storage.
In later years, it would be easy for people living in the houses above to make more space for themselves by cutting down through the sandstone to create storage spaces. Look through the gap in the cave wall and you will clearly see a set of sandstone steps coming down to an area that would be used for storage. This little cave that you are in has niches carved into the walls. This is where occupants would place candles, so you can imagine how dark it must have been.
Apart from the well shafts, there are two types of cave we made. One we cut into the cliff face, and those dug down from above and entered by steps. This cave is of the second sort, once used for storage and linked to a building above on the edge of the cliff.
Please make your way back into the main walkway and turn left. Continue a little way along the path until you come to the metal railings in front of a large circular cave. Cesspit.
There has been much debate between the archaeologists in Nottingham whether or not this cave that you can see was a cesspit or an ice house. One theory is that it was cut as a cesspit, a place where all the waste and sewage from the street above would have been thrown before the creation of sewers. Not nice when you think what could be seeping through the sandstone to the water wells a few feet away.
I've got a trick to cue a mate when they are thick.
Getting clean water to drink and wash was sometimes a hard task. You might dig and dig, only to find your fine new well was next door to your neighbour's privy. The stench which accumulated year after year penetrated the rock and oozed into the wells.
Another idea is that it may well have been used as an ice house. This area was very close to wet marshland and also to the River Leen. When these areas were frozen over, the ice would be broken and collected and brought to this cave where it would be stored all year round. What do you think? Cesspit or ice house? We are hoping to one day secure some funding that will enable the archaeologists to study the cave and give us some more information as to what it was actually used for.
When you are ready, carry along the path to the next cave. Please be careful as you enter, as the head height here is quite low. Take a seat on the benches provided. Horseshoe Cave.
You can take a seat in this cave for a moment and take the weight off your feet. We call this the Horseshoe Cave, as it was the cellar of the Three Horseshoes pub and because of its shape. It's one of many pub cellars that lie beneath the city. Many of them are still in use, but this one closed for business some time ago. The metal door that sits at the entry to a much smaller tunnel was added at a later date when the buildings above were used as a solicitor's office. We believe this is where they may have stored their important documents. Back in much earlier times, it's thought that caves like this once made great hiding places, or they may have been used for secret meetings, from gambling and smuggling to hatching conspiracies. Perhaps it was Robin Hood and his men planning the next advance into Nottingham Castle, or Dick Turpin, the highwayman, seeking refuge from the authorities if his haunts on the road became too dangerous for him, or to sell his stolen goods out of sight of prying eyes. Or more likely, Luddites, plotting to smash up a local lace mill. If you look closely at the ceiling of the cave, you will find a small hole that has been bored up through the sandstone. The story goes that whenever illegal meetings took place, a small boy was positioned as lookout at the top of this hole in the ceiling. If the authorities were sighted, then the boy would drop a pebble down the hole with a clatter, alerting the men to disperse. There we go, that's the sign. We better move into the next area.
Please make your way through the archway and into the next area. Tannery entrance.
The next section of caves that you are about to see were first used in around 1250 AD. They were initially used as malt kilns to make pottery, but by the 16th century these caves became associated mainly with the leather trade and with tanning. Over on the wall you can see various animal hides that have been tanned into leather. Try and imagine just how horrible that job would have been to get hold of a piece of skin fresh from an animal carcass and turn it into a piece of leather. The whole process would take many months. Nottingham boasts the only known example of a cave tannery in England. The main benefit of using these caves was the constant temperature of the sandstone, which greatly aided the leather-making process.
Move forwards to the next cave. Be careful of the varying floor levels here. Pause at the railings on the left-hand side. Pillar Cave.
Here we have the aptly named Pillar Cave. Look towards the back of the cave and imagine that you are looking out onto rolling fields in an area known as the Trent Valley. The original cave here was much smaller, and it wasn't until the tanners moved in that the sandstone was carved into the space that we have today. On many levels, tanning was a vile trade and dangerous to health. But don't take my word for it. Hear what our resident tanner has to say.
Well, I can tell you this, this is one of the finest tanneries in the country, and I've been down here for nearly 25 years, so there's certainly not a tanner in this whole county with more experience than me. We produce some of the finest leather here. Well, that's what tanning means, you see. It's a process of preserving animal skins and making them usable as leather. The days are long though, it's a tough job, and it doesn't suit everyone. I'm up at 5 a.m, working through to 7 or 8 in the evening, with just a short break to take my dinner. This first cave that you're in is where we prepare the skins. I can buy them from the slaughter yards or the butchers up top. There's plenty of them, so I can usually get a good price. When I first get the skins, they'll be covered in blood and little pockets of rotting flesh, so I'll scrape off the residue and then soak them in barrels of water and lime. You'll see the circular pits where the barrels were sunk. We'll leave the skins in the barrels for about 3 months to get them nice and soft, and then the solution will loosen the hairs. The skins are stretched over a sort of frame called a horse, and then we'll give the skins a good scraping with what's known in the trade as a beam knife. It's a blade as sharp as a witch's tongue. Make sure we've got all the remaining hairs and fat away from the skin. Now we're going to have to move along into the next cave to show you how the process is finished off. Move forward onto the bridge over there, where you'll see about a dozen vats cut into the sandstone floor. Just mind your step as you go. Here we are. This cave's usually a beehive of activity. You can see the vats in the floor here. They were lined with red clay. The skins would come from the pillar cave, and we put them into these vats, along with a horrible potent mixture of human urine, dog muck, bird droppings, and any other decaying matter that we can find. You won't believe the stench, it's horrible. But you soon get used to it. And you know, it keeps the rats away, so there's no plague down here. This horrible mess would produce bacteria that will aid the process of removing the lime from the skins, and it opens up the pores, making it smoother and softer. The skins will need to be washed off then. We'd often take them down to the ravine that runs through the marsh outside the cave. We need to be careful not to be caught by the town watchmen though. For some reason, they don't look too kindly on us washing our filthy skins in the town water supply. When washed, we bring the skins back to the cave and on the other side of this bridge. Here we lay the skins in the pits that you can see, with the best Sherwood Forest oak bark in between. And then we compact them down. Oh, we have to make sure we keep the skins moist at all times. And then we have to leave them for another 12 months. Yeah, a whole year to be used to best leather. If you don't possess patience, then this isn't a job for you. Tree bark and the moisture combine to make tannic acid. And this is what gives the leather its distinct colour and helps to preserve it. You have to be careful when you're unpacking the vats, as the hides are really soft now, oh, and they can tear quite easily. When they come out of the vats, we have to hang them up to dry, and then we can sell them on to the courier. Couriers work on the skins with oils, and it can make them extra soft and thin them out ready to be fashioned into boots or shoes or gloves or belts. So that's the job of a tanner. But there's much more to see here, and I better get back to my vats.
Now make your way out of the tannery by moving off the bridge. Mind your head as you leave through the exit, as the head height here is quite low. Turn right as you pass through the tannery exit and make your way to the gate at the end of the tunnel, the Western Caves.
Beyond this set of caves is what is known as the Western Caves, or Western Passage. These are not accessible to the public, as important archaeological work is still taking place in them. From digging in these caves, we have found evidence of yet more industry, and believe at one time white lead would have been manufactured for use in colouring breads and other types of confectionery items, and also in paint. Interestingly, the production process would require large quantities of spent oak from a tannery, so its position here may have been more than mere coincidence. Archaeologists have also found evidence to support large animals being kept in this area. Could there have been a slaughter yard here, where the meat was supplied to the butchers in the town, and the skins would find themselves being sold to the tanner? It also leads on to access the Willoughby House caves that lie beyond the Broadmarsh Centre. This is a very grand and well-formed cave system that shows how the upper classes also use caves, but perhaps only as an area to store their collection of fine wines. Willoughby House can be seen fully restored to all its former glory on Middle Pavement, just outside the shopping centre. It now houses the world-famous Paul Smith shop.
When you are ready, turn and follow the narrow passageway, taking care on the small set of steps as you go. Air raid.
Now we have entered the Second World War, where having lots of caves became very useful to the citizens of Nottingham. The city's air defences were the responsibility of Chief Constable Colonel A. Popkiss. 24,000 Anderson shelters made out of corrugated metal were distributed throughout Nottingham, and the authorities quickly began to work adapting the caves. Sandstone was a good shock absorber, and it would have been silly not to put the caves to good use. Some caves were whitewashed, and entrances were protected by reinforced walls. In the case of this cave, the entrance would have led straight out onto the street and was located at the top of the brick stairs that you came down at the beginning of the tour. Several small caves were linked together, which is why that tunnel now cuts through the old wells and the cesspit area that you went by earlier. By February 1941, a total of 86 caves had been converted into shelters. The largest was in Radford, beneath the John Player cigarette factory. That one was able to house nearly 9,000 people. New caves were also dug out, and they were a very straight cut compared to these older caves. One cave under the castle was even used to house uranium. Air raid wardens, or ARPs, that stands for air raid precautions, were an important part of keeping civilians safe during air raids. They had the task of patrolling the streets during blackout to ensure that no light was visible. If a light was spotted, the perpetrator was certain to get a good ticking off. ARPs could report persistent offenders to the local police. They were also responsible for the general upkeep and order in the public shelters, like this one.
Oi, can you hear that air raid siren? Let's have you in here quick as you can. You'll be safe and sound in here. Are we all in? Is everyone in? Nice and safe? Good, good, good. Take a seat here if you want. You have to wait here until all the all clear sounds. Hey, you've been very lucky during the war so far compared with other cities. There's only been about 11 light attacks on the city, but the worst was back in the 8th of May, 1941. Around 150 people were killed, 250 wounded when the Germans dropped over 400 bombs and 16 incendiaries on the city. There were 40 major fires across the city, West Bridgford, Meadows, Snenton, Mappley Park, the railway station, Boots Factory on London Road and the Lace Market, they all got hit. The bakery on Meadow Lane was hit, killing many workers and some members of the Home Guard. One plane got shot down, crashed into a tennis court in West Bridgford, but the pilot, he managed to bail out in time. They could be so worrying, sat down here with the gas mask on, listening to the bombs above, waiting for the all clear and not knowing if your house will be still standing when you get back up top. The same for me, you know. I've got a wife and family I need to look out for. I started this job as a volunteer, but I'm a full-time warden now, on duty for around 48 hours a week. I get £3 a week for that. But if you're a woman, you'll only get £2 a week. Ah, there we go. That's the all clear. We can go back up top and see if we've got any homes left to go to. Good day to you.
Move through the shelter and out of the exit onto the walkway. Pause here for a moment and face away from the brick wall of the shopping centre. Timeline.
Up above us here, you can see a nice slice of Nottingham history. An extraordinary cross-section of human activity that has occurred here through the centuries. The sheer size of the underbelly of the Broadmoor shopping centre gives a good impression of how these caves were nearly lost forever through this late 1960s development. Historically, this area was extremely boggy ground, and on the outskirts of the medieval town. It was once occupied by the Franciscan friary known as Grey Friars Nottingham, which was dissolved in 1539. The area was heavily developed between the 16th and 20th centuries, but despite its historic interest and much local opposition, all the buildings were demolished to accommodate the new shopping centre. During the preparations of the site, Many caves and cellars dug into the soft sandstone foundations of the city were rediscovered. These caves were to be destroyed as part of the construction. However, activism from residents and historians allowed the caves to be preserved, and they were declared an historic monument by English Heritage to ensure that they remained intact for future generations to enjoy. If you slowly cast your eyes down from the concrete ceiling to the floor of the Tanning Cave, you travel through some 700 years of historical change.
Please continue along the passageway, taking care on the small set of steps as you go. In the next area, you are welcome to sit on the bench provided. Drury Hill.
When the tannery was in operation, this area would most likely have been the tanner's yard. It would have been the main entrance to the tannery and would have possibly had a number of storage sheds built against the rock. It was also the area where the cliff face ended. If you look through the World War II bomb site, the wall that you see is the remains of an old Victorian hosiery factory. This was built on top of an earlier Georgian public house, and the lower course of bricks that you see date from that time. The public house was called the Sign of the Parrot. If you look carefully up above the wall, you will see a mirror. This is reflecting all that remains of a street called Drury Hill.
Once, Narrow Marsh was one of the wealthiest parts of Nottingham, and Drury Hill, narrow, steep and winding, was the main thoroughfare for travellers coming into Nottingham from the south. For some reason, it remained free from the plague in 1667. People thought this was because of the smells of the tanning process, and so many wealthy people moved in. They'd rather have stench than disease.
The area declined in importance in the later Middle Ages, and with the coming of the Industrial Revolution, it was part of the town where working-class housing was thrown up.
When you are ready, please move along the passageway. First, taking care on the step down, and secondly, taking care as the passageway narrows here. Basements.
The first boom in Nottingham's lace trade in the early 19th century brought people flooding in from the countryside looking for work. Now slums replaced the earlier houses and the area became a very unpleasant place to live.
We had to put up with overcrowding, damp from the river and its marshes, the constant fear of flooding, quite the most appalling sanitation, and, of course, the smell and the mess from tanning.
By the end of the 1820s, this area swarmed with the very poorest workers. Their homes were crammed into alleys and back-to-back courts, and they lacked even the very basic sanitation. You are now standing in one of those very streets, and you are walking through what is left of a slum dwelling. But remember that this is not a stage set or an old film location. This was once someone's home.
The courts are noisome, narrow, ill-ventilated and wretched in the extreme.
The floors and the fronts of the houses are damp and uncleanly.
You could shake hands with each other from each bedroom window down there.
In an area of under 9 acres are 883 houses, 947 families, 4,283 persons.
Maggots in common flesh or mites in cheese could not be huddled more closely together.
Nowhere else shall we find so large a mass of inhabitants crowded together as in Nottingham.
Eventually, the authorities realized what appalling conditions people had to put up with.
The staircases are very steep, dark, and narrow, and under them are situated black, choky holes of pantries.
I have frequently found families of 5 and 6 living and sleeping in rooms not more than 12 feet square.
The walls, floors, and ceilings of the rooms were dirty and crumbling, and everywhere intersected with vermin.
Because we lived against the sandstone cliff, we were able to extend our meager homes into the rock. We made extra cellars by cutting through. Look, beyond the kitchen, the hole at the back leads down to a sandstone cellar.
Look around you and you will get an idea of what it was that shocked the inspectors of a century or more ago. But it took until 1923 before much of this area was condemned and demolished.
Continue along the passageway and you will come to a set of steps. Pause momentarily before the steps and turn to face the wall on your left-hand side. Archaeology.
If you look at this section of the wall closely, you will see yet more evidence of the archaeological change that has occurred over more than 700 years. The traces of shuttering plywood and the concrete beam that you see are more examples of the foundations of the 1970 shopping centre. Below that you see much of the backfill that contains the rubbish and brick debris from the 18th and 19th century factories and housing that once stood on this site. Lower still, and you will see the light and dark brown bands that contain the decomposed and compressed remains of what was once probably a medieval cesspit. The wide concrete pillar on the opposite side of the passageway and next to the emergency door soars up through the ceiling to support the Nottingham tramway that runs directly over the top of this area. The constant vibrations of the trams are continuing to shake the caves and dislodge small pockets of the sandstone from the walls and the ceilings, a situation that we continue to monitor.
When you are ready, please make your way down the small flight of steps in front of you. Please be very careful on these steps, as they can often be wet and slippery, so please use the handrail provided. Please also take care to mind your head in this area, as the cave ceiling is quite low. Please pause in the next cave, Sam Hancock.
Here we find ourselves in yet another pub cellar. It wasn't unusual for a tavern in Nottingham to have a cave cellar because the temperature was always cool and constant. Nottingham had a very good national reputation for the quality of its beer, and by 1822 there were at least 2 taverns or public houses on every single street in the town. And 40 years later there were well over 400 licensed premises. You can see the thralls or raised shelves here where the casks of ale once sat. This is the remains of Sam Hancock's public house. The upper floors were demolished in the 1890s to allow for the creation of a new railway tunnel that still lies beyond the brick wall in the next cave. As we heard at the beginning of the tour, the cellars of some of Nottingham's alehouses were also used for secret meetings and to plan action against the authorities. Just as the Industrial Revolution was gaining momentum in the early years of the 19th century, there was a strong reaction to the low wages and to the quality of goods being manufactured. These secret underground meetings became more frequent. And in pub cellars, possibly in this very cellar, Luddites would lay plans to smash the machine frames of unscrupulous employers, yet leave those frames belonging to honest men untouched.
We framework knitters took pride in our traditions and skill in making stockings, gloves, shirts and pantaloons. And we were deeply offended by the shoddy articles that were resulting from new slapdash techniques and cheap, unskilled labour.
Most of us worked at home and found too that our rents were increasing constantly. When peaceful attempts to protect ourselves failed, we felt forced to resort to violence.
The rioters appeared suddenly in armed parties. The chief commander, be he whomsoe'er he may, is styled General Ludd.
The dread name Ludd was invoked at night in taverns and alehouses. Men said that to disobey an order given on its authority was to risk immediate death.
The very daring of their exploits and their loyalties to each other capture the hearts and minds of the working class, defying the law on behalf of the helpless, just like Robin Hood had done more than 6 centuries before. But faced with the death penalty for machine breaking and an influx of troops, Luddism died out in 1817. But some 14 years later, the plotting and rebellious protest would reappear.
Nottingham found itself at the centre of more riots in 1831, when the Chartists took to the streets to demand the right of working men, men from the slums, to vote. An angry mob set off through the streets, attacking shops and houses. At the castle, the mob smashed down the gates and set fire to the whole place, reducing it to a blackened shell, and doing far more damage than King Richard I had ever done.
When you are ready, please move forward towards the brick pillar at the end of the second cellar cave. Progress.
If you look to your right at this point, you will see a brick wall. Beyond the wall is the tunnel built in the 1890s to bring trains from the south, under the city, to the newly built Victoria train station, which incidentally is now also a shopping centre. The trains stopped long ago, but the tunnel is still there, and you are still able to walk under the city to the Victoria shopping centre, although access is denied to the public. Above it now stands the new Nottingham Contemporary Art Centre. It shows how the modern world continues to grow above these caves that continue to offer a glimpse into Nottingham's past.
Thank you for visiting the City of Caves today, and we really hope that you have enjoyed your experience. If you require more information about the City of Caves and the other cave systems that lie under our fascinating city, there are publications for sale that are available in the gift shop. There is also a website dedicated to Nottingham's cave systems that can be found at www.nottinghamcavesurvey.org.uk that maps many of the systems that are currently unavailable to public visitors. We would like to thank you for visiting the City of Caves today and make you aware that the admission fee that you have paid will go towards preserving and maintaining this protected, scheduled historic monument for future generations to enjoy. It's now time to retrace your steps back to the 21st century and to discover what other delights this fantastic city and county have to offer. When you are ready, and if the stairway is clear, please make your way back up the steps to the main reception area.